A scrawny, accident-prone little green lizard wouldn't seem like the most obvious choice for the lead character of a Western. On top of that, Gore Verbinski, who's directed the multi-billion dollar Pirates of the Caribbean series, doesn't seem a likely candidate to tackle an animated cowboy film that's populated by various gunslinging Gila monsters, bank-robbing prairie dogs, and a mayor who is a tortoise. But Rango, which opens this Friday, is an inventive, stylish movie that's really a lot of fun, and it stars Johnny Depp, Alfred Molina, Bill Nye, Harry Dean Stanton, Ray Winston, and Ned Beatty, among others. And I'm very pleased to get this opportunity to talk with Gore Verbinski, who not only came up with the story, but also produced and directed. Welcome to our show.
Thanks, Leonard.
Should I be all that surprised that you've gone from live action to animation?
Well, I think we do a lot of animated sequences in live action films, so it wasn't completely foreign.
And in the Pirates of the Caribbean series, you had quite a bit.
Yeah. And these are basically the same people who developed relationships with over that period of time.
You're talking about the people at George Lucas's?
Yeah, and some artists that I work with at Blind Wink. And just, you know, you develop a way of communicating with people.
But had Industrial Light and Magic ever produced done a complete animated film before?
No, none of us had. And we kind of knew that it was going to be something different.
And how long had you been mulling over doing something like this?
The idea of doing an animated Western genre was sort of kicked around in 2003. And then I worked on an outline, about 12 pages, a sketch of the entire movie, and then went off to make two other pirate films. So it's sort of, you know, festering and incubating there for a while. And then it felt like it was time.
Was not having done an animated film an asset or a hazard for you? Did you approach it as you would a live action film?
Yeah, but basically that's what that you know, out of fear you of abandoning techniques that maybe you get comfortable with, you sort of apply them. It's, you know, animation is not, in my opinion, not a genre. It's a technique for telling a story, and we just tried to tell a story.
Well, in most animated films, the actors go into an isolated sound booth and they read their lines, and then later the animators move the lips according to how they've delivered the lines. But you didn't do that here, did you?
Well, I think that comes from, you know, historically using voiceover talent in perhaps, you know, Tex Avery cartoons and things like that, where you weren't using actors or movie stars or, you know, celebrities. You were using specific, you know, voiceover talent. And I think there's a comfort level perhaps for an animation director applying that technique. For me, it just was absurd to not have Harry Dean Stanton and Ned Beatty together, you know, Alfred Molina. You know, I wanted to see actors react. I mean, that's what I don't know how else to direct.
You put them in costumes. You had to move around.
Well, it was much more childish than that. I mean, we were in a large room with a carpeted floor, and you could come in street clothes. And if you wanted to grab a hat or a sidearm, you know, feel free to do so. But we're doing 10, 12 pages a day, and you know, there's rudimentary props, and you know, you're jumping off of apple boxes and clashing into each other and sort of getting out of breath. And it was all about getting a lively soundtrack at that point.
Did you film all of that?
We shot some videotape. You know, it was really about the audio experience at that point. The boom man is king, and sort of chasing everybody around. And
well, obviously, Johnny Depp is a lot better looking than Rango. So you didn't just do an animated version of these people. But why a Western? Periodically, people predict that Westerns are a dead genre as far as Hollywood is concerned. And yet they keep on being resurrected.
Well, I think, I don't know, I grew up on Western, so it's in my DNA. But I think they've been, I think the pirate films are Westerns in a way. I think Star Wars is a Western. I think they've been sort of hiding outside of the Western landscape
Because people felt that just the old kind of Western, riding horses and all of that, had become tired. So you'd take pretty much the same kinds of mythologies that drove those Westerns and you put them in spacecraft?
Yeah, you apply them to a new
or
setting.
Or ships in the Caribbean.
Yeah, I think maybe people are kind of longing for a simpler time. Maybe it's, you know, we started this thing 3.5 years ago, really, in earnest. So if there's any synchronicity between this and you know, True Grit or whatever coming out at the same time, there was no agenda. But maybe maybe people, audiences are somehow longing for that
well,
story.
Well, Avatar was a Western, wasn't it? Completely a Western. Except those blue people were the old Native Americans.
They were the Dances with Wolves.
Well, but what do you think the appeal is? Adventure? Quest? Because this is a quest film, isn't it?
I think it's different for different people. I mean, I was a fan of the postmodern Western. I came in through Leone and Peckinpah and sort of later in life started to appreciate John Ford. So I was always fascinated with the end of an era, the gunslingers being, you know, the myths are dying and the railroad's coming, or, you know, there's a Gatling gun or you know, an automobile and Wild Bunch. And so I was always fascinated with that and kind of came in from that perspective. So those themes have really stuck with me.
Gore Verbinski is my guest. His latest film is not on the Caribbean. It's Rango, and it opens this Friday. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Rango goes from being in a safe glass terrarium to being lost in the Mojave Desert, where he in no way fits in and has to invent himself, which is kind of a classic story. But it also, what adds to this is the kind of lizard he is.
He's a chameleon. Yeah, he is. He's an actor, a thespian, sort of in search of an audience. He probably well versed in Homer and Shakespeare and Sergio Leone, and is quite aware of the fact that he's walked into a Western genre. And I think he adapts and takes on the persona of the classic Western hero.
But his quest seems to be to learn who he really is, and I guess that's because he is a chameleon. It could be anything.
Yeah, I think that's the real story here. Is that, you know, who is Rango, and certainly when people start believing in him, things get complicated.
Well, more and more we're seeing animated films that have appeal for adult audiences, and I suspect that you were thinking about that here. This is not a kid's movie, per se.
Yeah, I don't think it's a genre animation. I think it's a technique to tell a story. I mean, in the 70s, you had Ralph Bakshi doing those, you know, amazing movies, and you had
Fritz the Cat?
Fritz the Cat. You had, I mean,
they were X-rated in some cases.
Yeah, I just think we're a PG movie, and made the film for the kind of child within. It's been nice to see kids respond to it and adults. And we just tried to have fun.
Well, since you've had such success with Johnny Depp in the Pirates movies, did you always have him in mind as the voice for Rango?
Yeah, I think Johnny is a chameleon in many ways. And we talked about it early on when I just had the kind of the beginnings of the idea. And he really responded to the concept of this chameleon, you know, who could be anything. And I think there's probably a little bit of all these characters that Johnny's created are still inside him, you know. So sitting down and saying, well, if you're a little Jack Sparrow and you're a little Scissorhands and you're a little Ed Wood, and, you know, who is Johnny Depp? And to just see a kind of flicker of, you know, I wouldn't call it doubt, but it's a complex emotional response. And to kind of go, boom, that moment right there, that's what Rango's suffering with. And certainly working with John Logan on the screenplay, we really kind of keyed into that question. And it required, you know, a lot of detail in the performance to capture those emotions.
And you have a number of British actors here, Alfred Molina, Bill Nye. I'm sure a lot of people who saw The Fighter were shocked when they heard Christian Bale talk in a kind of an East End London accent last night at the Academy Awards. The Brits are doing that, the American accents, very well these days. But is it because you've been comfortable working with them as well?
Well, I just think there's theater. You know, there's so much theater over there. So in Hollywood, we get a lot of actors who, you know, especially the younger actors, are kind of, you know, the sons of agents who want to be famous or whatever. You don't have a lot of love for the craft. And I think when I go to the UK, I just meet people who sort of they love doing it. It's not about a popularity contest.
You had Ned Beatty brings to mind John Huston's character in Chinatown.
Yeah, we modeled the mayor off of John Huston, and you know, Ned was my second choice, but it was nice talking to him because he'd worked with John a few times and talking to him on the phone, and he really had some great stories.
It's interesting to see actors do these voices because acting is so much about reaction and the things that happen, how you stand, how your eyes blink while somebody's talking to you, and none of that is available, and yet they do still get across real character.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a talent and the part of the animator, and we certainly, you know, if you break this movie down, it's a year and a half in story reel, which is basically character design and storyboards, then 20 days with the actors, and then another year and a half at ILM, and that last year and a half that, you know, we are having conversations which are, you know, he shouldn't blink at frame 42. He should blink at frame 56. And, you know, we need a little muscle spasm, involuntary muscle spasm, subsurface under the left eye to indicate a tell or a trembling or, you know, all those things. They're endless discussions.
And this is – what are you shooting actually here?
These
are all drawings?
Well, it's constructed on the computer as three-dimensional renderings. Starts as a two-dimensional pencil sketch. Married with the audio track, and then, you know, really high detailed drawings, and then models are created, and then blocked, and it's iteration after iteration after iteration. So keeping it raw and intuitive, or certainly trying to create the feeling that you've got, you know, the mantra at ILM with the guys was let's fabricate anomaly wherever possible to create this feeling that I've got a camera on my shoulder and you know. Leonard, you may be a tortoise, and you know somebody else may be a 5'8" lizard having a conversation, and I'm photographing it, maybe using a piece from take 6 and a piece from take 3, and we're trying to create the feeling that it's occurring.
Well, these days everything seems to have been converted to 3D, and this film looks like it could have been done in 3D, but it isn't.
Yeah, there were discussions about midway through the 3.5 year process about could we be. In 3D, and you know, it was very adamant about not converting the film, which is a less expensive process, but ultimately not pixel accurate. So you know, I think in real life we get comfort. We know that chair is 6 feet away from me, and I can get there in 3.5 steps. When you convert, everything's guessed at all those distances, and I personally get a headache when I see those films. And I do think 3D done pixel perfect is, can be enjoyable. Ultimately, and that's a more expensive process. We looked at the movie and I just didn't feel like there was a dimension missing. I felt like it would have been a gimmick to kind of charge more money perhaps, but didn't feel like we were missing anything.
Although some people are claiming it's the wave of the future. Now we have 3D television on the near horizon. I suspect I will resist that for a while. You also have this town called Dirt, and it has a very, very contemporary problem. It has a water problem.
Mm.
Some people are predicting that in the coming years we won't see wars over oil. We'll see wars over water.
Yeah, well, I think it's a very – you know, it's interesting to get that comment a lot because people have asked, is the movie, you know, a green film? And I think – again, getting back to that sort of postmodern Western, I think those movies were probably green in the sense that, you know, the simplicity of life was sort of usurped by this algorithm of progress and that somehow there's a better world if we all get on this train and go. And I think we've sort of maybe forgotten where we're going and we're just on the train kind of consuming and growing and progressing, but there's no sense of the cost of that. And so really water, hydration in the case of this film was really a plot device early on simply to try to and in California certainly the sort of Chinatown plot was very real. It was based on real facts and historical facts. So it seemed appropriate to us and then it also served the function of very much like what the railroad would do in Once Upon a Time in the West.
Well, what about developing a look? In Once Upon a Time in the West, Sergio Leone takes care of that by using all sorts of interesting lenses that'll give you this incredible sense of depth, and he plays all sorts of games with space. But you have the Pixar films and all these other films that have already established some kind of an animated, or at least the new approach to animated look. How do you come up with something that doesn't look like everybody else's?
Well, part of the fact that none of us have done it before, the byproduct of that is it's going to be different. Also, we really applied a live action approach whenever possible. We cheat in live action. There's always two sons. If there's two people standing at either end of a street in a gunfight, we shoot that way in the morning and we shoot that way at the end of the day, and we cut it together. So we're always cheating, putting people on apple boxes, lowering lenses, and so we were trying to apply the same. You'll see simple things. You'll see bumps in the camera. You'll see flares. You'll see the sky behind somebody in a close-up change, because on a computer, it's the easiest thing is to make everything match and everything perfect. It's a lot harder to make it mismatch, and so we just went the extra, 20 yards.
Well, that cheating has always been the case. Alan Ladd, who was very short, used to walk alongside his leading ladies, who were walking in a trough, if I remember correctly, so that he wouldn't be shorter than they were.
We do it all the time. Every time we move the camera, it's we're moving everything.
Now, you began in commercials, didn't you? And there was some animation. Didn't you do the Budweiser frogs?
Yes.
So
yes.
Is this to some degree a return to your first love?
Well, I think commercials were always a means to an end. They were a way to get behind the camera and just practice. But certainly there was no love of that, and you have to abandon, I think, the 30-second, for a longer form narrative, you have to abandon a lot of things.
Well, you do learn a bit about telling a story very quickly. On the other hand, people have complained that all of the directors who come from doing commercials have led to something that some of us find a little upsetting, which is cut, 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 cut,
right.
Cut, cut.
Yeah. No, I'm a fan of
Sergio Leone. I mean, that's long take.
And Hal Ashby. And, I don't even watch contemporary movies. Everything I watch is from the 70s. My casting director is really, she always goes, can't you reference somebody who's not dead whenever I'm looking for an actor? I enjoy the pace that we seem to have abandoned. And like I say, commercials were a means to an end. And, any chance to get behind the camera early on.
Well, there have been three Pirates of the Caribbean films. There are going to be more, but you're not going to do any of the others?
That's correct.
Was it hard giving up that thing?
Not really. I mean, there's an emotional attachment to the characters, but I think when things don't scare you anymore, it's time to move on. You get
too comfortable. Too much of a comfort zone?
Yeah. When we made that first pirate film, everybody thought we were crazy, you wake up at 3 a.m. in a cold sweat, kind of nervous about whether you can pull it off. And certainly making an animated film was the same feeling. It was a good feeling to have again.
But what was the biggest challenge in making Rango? Was it anything like live film, or was it totally different?
I think the biggest challenge is probably the fact that there are no gifts along the way, that you can't, other than that 20-day audio record, there's no other time. Mm-hmm. In the 3.5 years where you can respond intuitively to anything. And there's something beautiful about orchestrating some chaos and seeing an actor slip off the page, or seeing an event, something happen where, everybody comes in with an agenda, and to see another actor do something and then that actor's response wasn't planned, those are the moments you're searching for something honest.
It's like those fortuitous drips in a painting. You say, oh, gee. Yeah. Exactly. I could never have painted that drip, but it's worked so perfectly.
Yeah, it's all frontal lobe stuff, and you want something gut. You want something you can respond to, or something that can become intuitive. So we tried to preserve any sort of awkward moment, manufacture anomaly wherever possible.
So now that you've done this and you've had the other success, where do you go from here? Are you going to do more animated films?
I'd like to at some point. I mean, if depending on the story. I mean, it's all about, you know, trying to find some, you know, I think you have to answer this question. Why do you have to tell this story? The biggest horror is being 100 days into a movie and you can't answer that question.
I've asked another question of some directors when they have had terrible flops. You're a brilliant director. You've had all these great successes. How could you have made these terrible mistakes? And their answer usually is, when you're in the middle of shooting something, you're thinking, how did the camera move? Was the sun good? How was that line delivered? And it's only in the editing room that you realize that you have a mess. But that wouldn't be the case in something like this.
Well, there's no outtakes. I mean, it takes a month to see one close-up rendered. So, it's a completely different process. I think the flop is inevitable. I mean, it's like at-bats, you know. You can't have an average. The more at-bats, the more likely you're going to, you know, be batting 250, not 1,000. So I think if you embrace that, it allows you to try something different.
But you still haven't answered my question. What's in the works? You don't want to tell me?
Changing the screen door, some light bulbs. I like to at least have a few weeks where I don't know.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of things. We're talking about The Lone Ranger. We're talking about Walter Mitty. We're talking about a couple of interesting, really small movies. Schedule.
You're talking about live action films again.
Yeah. I think when I get back behind the camera.
Does this just take too long to pull off?
My respect for animation directors has gone way, way up. I mean, it is exhausting, absolutely exhausting, but really fun. I mean, you have, you know, there are no gifts, but you have sort of ultimate control. So,
just one more thing. I was surprised that I didn't recognize Johnny Depp's voice. Mm. I recognized the other voices, but does he have a whole range of voices? Is that it?
Yeah, and we really tried to push that a little bit more on Rango because he is a chameleon. He is a, you know, he can be all these things. So it's nice to have a deep voice, have a high-pitched voice. And Johnny really keyed into this concept that maybe because he's a liar, basically, like any good actor. But maybe he's a bad liar. Maybe he's I didn't steal the cookie. Mm-hmm. You know, the pitch goes up, you know, when people sometimes, especially with children, when they lie, the involuntary sort of blinks and pitch shifts and those tells. So really embraced that and a little bit of Don Knotts.
Mm-hmm. I really don't think of Don Knotts when I look at Johnny Depp, but I'll think about that.
Hey, he's one of the greatest actors of our time, Don Knotts.
Gore Verbinski is the director, producer, and one of the people who put together the story. I don't know how that worked, but...
Yeah, just, you know, working, weaving fabric. It's a lot of fun.
And Rango opens on Friday at theaters around town. Thank you so much for being with us.
A pleasure, Leonard. Thank you so much.